welcome to the Retro Asylum, the UK's number one retro gaming podcast show. Dean will be proud of me because I've remembered to say that once again. This is episode... I don't know, because Dean has been recording himself this week, so I'm not going to embarrass myself by saying the wrong episode number. This is episode 260-something. That'll do. Now, this is a special episode for me because I'm joined on this one-off special occasion by prominent member of the RA Discord community, Martin Stevenson, a.k.a. Deadlock. Martin, how are you, mate?
I'm good, Chris. I haven't been as prominent as I used to be. I've been a bit sidetracked lately, but I'm good.
You'll always be prominent to me.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah, so Martin, you're here because anybody who is a member of our Discord community or follows you on social media will know that you are also a prominent member of the Evercade community.
That's right, yeah. I've been quite involved in the last year, I'd say. Year, yeah.
Yeah, and we are going to be joined very shortly by Ryan Decker and Sean Cleaver of Blaze Entertainment, who are going to be talking to us about all things Evercade, and that is coming up very soon. But before they do join us, mate, how did you get involved then with the Evercade? And tell our listeners, for those who don't know, what it is you do on your sites, and I'll leave you to give the URL towards the end.
Yeah, so I suppose just over a year ago, I wasn't actually, confession time, I wasn't that interested in Evercade. And
no, well, there was a lot of people who were like you, I think, who have subsequently become very interested.
And I think it was around Father's Day last year, I think, and we had gone somewhere, and just to get out of the house, it was one of the times when we weren't completely in lockdown, you know what I mean? Mm. And we were beside Argos, and Argos here in Ireland stock Evercade, so I picked one up. And then I started playing it, and one of the things that occurred to me was they have really nice little manuals, but I wanted to see the original manuals because I wanted to see how the games worked or how they were back in the day, you know. So I started to look it up and I found a few manuals online and I just thought to myself, maybe I should put up a website. And at the time, my wife is currently doing a master's in education to become a teacher. And one of the first things she had to do was put up a site about herself using WordPress. And I helped her do it. And I said, I could throw up a WordPress site pretty quickly, I think, you know. So I decided to bring up the website and put some manuals on it. And from that, I had contacted Blaze because I wanted to check with them. I said, is it okay if I put up a website? And they said, yeah, no, that's fine. But, you know, just make sure that people know it's an unofficial website, that it's not, you know, it's not connected to us in any way, just in case I make a show of them.
Blaze, you know? Retro brings to you.
yeah, exactly. So I put up the website and then I discovered they had a Discord channel. So I went into the Discord channel and, you know, I was active enough there asking questions and stuff and chatting to the people. And at the time they had a few beta testers and I had pinged one of them and I said, could I become a beta tester? I'd be quite interested. I said, I have a background because my day job is I work in IT, right? So I said, you know, I could do a bit of testing and, you know, kind of thinking to myself, oh, this would be kind of a nice, something nice to do during lockdown because I'm into retro consoles and to be able to actually work on a retro console would be pretty cool.
So you applied to be a beta tester then for the games, for the cards?
Well, the beta testers were only testing at that point, essentially firmwares and some bug fixes on the firmware. So it wasn't in-depth.
Was this pre-release of the handheld then?
No, the handheld had been released, but they were still bringing out updates and things, you know what I mean? Yeah. So on the firmware side and some fixes on the firmware to check out games and stuff. You know, when I started doing that, they sent me an extra console because they said, look, you're going to be doing updates. You shouldn't have to be using your own console that you bought when you're doing this for us. Because it's like I was doing it as a hobby, you know what I mean? A volunteer type thing.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, really good like that. So I got talking to them and then I got to know some of the devs on it more and more. And then they set up another team. They said, we're setting up another team. They call it the Super Testers. And then a few of us went in there. And from there, then we started testing upcoming games. We knew what were coming up. And because I had the background as well in IT, I started to look at some of their back end systems. So Ryan at the time had some code for, you know, building you know, prototype cartridges and that, and I had a look at it, and I said, oh, because you had to run it locally, I said I could rewrite that in, say, Python and run it on your server, so you wouldn't have to do anything locally. So I rewrote that. So when they get a cart, for example, and we get the files and stuff, it basically pulls down images from the web and builds a kind of a prototype cartridge that you can drop in then to try out and stuff like that. And then towards the end of last year, they were getting they said, oh, would you be interested in writing a Discord bot for us? So I did that as well. So I hadn't written Discord bots before, so I did that. And so I've kind of worked with them since then and worked a lot on the new VS that's coming out and that.
Yeah.
So kind of got into it from that point of view. And I was, you know, really proud when the VS, which is not out yet, but they're starting to put out the videos.
Yeah, they're starting to kind of creep out into the ether, aren't they?
Yeah. It's really beginning to get a bit of traction now. And, you know, the reviews are starting to come in from the YouTubers, you know, because obviously they're going to give it to the bigger YouTubers to try and get that coverage.
The influencers.
Yeah, because the people that are into Evercade, they know about it already, right? So you want to kind of reach a bigger audience. Yeah. So I'm then actually credited in the credits as lead tester and production assistant. So I was really proud of that. Nice. Yeah. So it's my name on a retro console, you know. So, no matter how things go, and of course they'll go brilliantly before they kick me up the ass for saying anything. You know what I mean? But no, it was really, really nice, you know, to be just involved. And they're a really good bunch of people. We sometimes have, you know, we had Secret Santa last year and beers. We'd love to, you know, all meet up. But, you know, even me personally, looking at what they've been doing and trying to push it for a smallish team with everything that's been happening with the pandemic, and still to get it together and get all the components and still be able to ship it, you know, it's quite a bit of work, and they really love their games, you know, and I'm not just saying that because I work with the guys, you know what I mean, but they're big into it, you know what I mean.
Well, the community has really sprung up around the Evercade, hasn't it? I mean, it's one of the things that I've been really taken with since I got my Evercade. I mean, there's all kinds of sites. There's the magazine, it's a single player machine, isn't it? The handheld. Of course, it is. It's a single player machine. But I think the fact that there is this community that has built up around it means that there are high school competitions going on, and there are people sharing hints at some of the games. And yeah, there's some Twitter users and YouTubers who have gone through and are trying to complete all of the games that have been released, all 260 something of them.
Yeah.
So it's great, isn't it? I mean,
it really feels
like it's got that, a bit of a cliche, I suppose, at this point, but it feels like it's got that playground vibe to it.
It has that kind of community around it, and I have to mention the guys that did the magazine on the non-official Facebook fans page, and they've done a fantastic job on that as well. There's a lot of work gone into it. It's really, really good. So I better get it in there, or they'll shoot me, because I'm a kind of an honorary admin on their site as well, but they've done all the work, you know.
So have you had hands on with the VS?
Yes, I have two of them sitting here, actually.
Do you have two of them?
Yeah. Well, they were test units, so they were pre-production units. And I actually have a board in the press. I initially, Ryan had sent me over a board to test out some stuff. And I didn't have a case for it, so I built a case out of Lego for it. So it was just a board in some Lego, because it was literally a board sitting on my desk. You know what I mean? So
are you allowed to share pictures of this thing? Because I bet you'd be many people who'd love to see your Lego Evercade.
Well, I got enough slagging about it anyway, I can tell you. So from the guys on the Discord channel, on the dev group. But I'll have to ask Ryan if I can share them. But I did as good as I could, you know.
Certainly when it's released, I think there'll be many people on the RA Discord who would love to see it.
Yeah. So it was just because I wanted to protect it, and I wanted something. Although I had to break up some of my kids' models. So I don't think my daughter, she's very particular about her little Lego models. If she goes in looking for them again now, she's going to find that there's a lot of pieces missing, you know.
So what is it for you then? I mean, I know that you are partial by the very nature of your role within the community and with the official Evercade Blaze group as well. Mm-hmm. What is your what are you most excited about with the VS coming up?
Ooh, good question. I think just for the multiplayer to get people together playing, and I try and get please God, when lockdown lifts, get some of my mates over and actually just have a few beers And there was a friend of mine who lives a couple of miles away, and I haven't seen him in quite a few years. But back in the day, I used to go over to his house, and we used to play. We both had Commodore 64s, and you'd literally go over, close the curtains, and you'd be just playing games all day on C64. Yeah, yeah. So that sort of vibe, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And stuff like that's coming out on, say, for example, the Bitmap Brothers cartridge. I used to love Speedball too. Stuff like that, you know, those competitive type games. That would be really good, you know. So for me, I'm really looking forward to that. And of course, I'm trying to get my kids into it as well, because, you know, I have to have someone to play with at home. So
any joy?
You know,
I struggle with mine.
They do like it. It's funny. My 8-year-old loves the Vectrex. She loves pole position on the Vectrex.
Really?
She absolutely loves it. It's really strange. Yeah. So.
I've been trying to get my daughter's been getting involved with Tapper so far this month. You know, because Tapper's our game at the moment, and she's actually on the scoreboard. First time I've managed to get one of the kids to actually post the score. She's even threatening to do a listener clip.
That would be really good. That would be really good. I was just going to say, I pinged the guys on the channel today to ask John V what he's playing Soft Porn Adventure on, because I have a Mac as well. So I downloaded it today, and I had like 5 minutes of it between calls just to see what it was like. So,
did you get very far?
No. But, you know, I had to have a look, you know, seeing as going on so much about the cover. I said, I'll have to, you know, it's research. It's a video game. I have to have a look at
it. But that I must warn you, the cover is about as titillating as it gets.
Yeah. But I can just imagine nowadays me going into work and looking for three girls to sit in the pool for a photo. It's crazy, you know.
What does Roushey say? NSFW, it's not safe for work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, look, should we get Sean and Ryan on?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, let's go to a quick break and we'll be back with Sean and Ryan.
Come on, Hobbit says, follow Smeagol, good Smeagol. Games. Oh, he loves his games, but he hates his retro games. No, we don't. He loves his retro games. No, we hates it. We hates us the pixel count. No, we loves the pixel count. Smeagol loves pixels. No!
So we're back, and Martin and I have been joined by Sean Cleaver and Ryan Decker of Blaze Entertainment. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Very busy men.
Yeah.
Yeah, how's it going?
Living a dream, mate. Living a dream. Another day in paradise. Another day in paradise.
This is exciting time, though, right? I mean, you're close to the VS release date. I mean, it must feel like it's all happening.
I mean, without breaking the fourth rule of podcasting here, I guess, it is actually a day after when the original release date would have been. So we were expecting this time to be the day that we could, you know, completely decompress. But obviously with the unfortunate delays in shipping and the fact that it is coming a little bit later, we've managed to give ourselves an extended stress period of another month and a half to try and cope with.
You enjoyed the stress so much, you just didn't want it to end.
Oh, it's what keeps us going, you know.
So just let's do some very brief introductions then before we start talking about the good stuff. Sean, just explain to our listeners your role and what you do day to day at Blaze.
So I'm the marketing manager at Blaze Entertainment, and that involves a lot of things, from coordinating everything that goes out on social media to press releases to advertising to all the things that everybody gets to see in public that helps talk about the Evercade and show off the Evercade. And that goes from everything we do to everything we do with influencers, press, podcasts, everything really.
Okay. All right. Thank you. And Ryan, what's your day-to-day role?
I make a mean cup of tea.
Well, that's important, right?
I will object to that. I'm yet to know about this. All I've been given is a Tassimo pot of coffee.
Well,
that's all right, isn't it?
Just because you wear the tea lady dress doesn't mean you're making the tea, right?
That's only at night. So so I'm the CTO at Blaze. So that's basically all the ones and zeros. So making the thing, making sure we actually got a product to actually give to you guys, and Yeah, basically just doing all the technical stuff, really.
A mildly important role, it sounds.
Well, one should hope so, you know. Hopefully I'm earning my paycheck, so, you know, that's...
Well, we all have our areas of improvement, don't we? So if T's one of yours, then, hey, embrace it.
Yeah, you know what? If that's just my only downfall, then I think I'm doing pretty well. So,
Yes, indeed. So let's just, before we look forward, because I think most of our listeners will want to hear more about the VS and hear how we're getting on and whether we're looking good for next month. Before we do that, though, just reflecting back, it's been almost 18 months now since the Evercade was released. How do you reflect on the past 18 months and the upsides and the downsides?
That's an interesting one. Well, okay, so I think sorry, I was just trying to think how long the VS project actually started. Obviously,
been a good few years, I think, hasn't it? Really, like, I mean,
yeah,
I remember explaining this the other day at Play Expo, and I gave a little talk up there and saying, you know, the VS project has sort of been there from the initial, right, we've got this part done, now let's move on to the next part after the handheld was released. But I think the idea's always been there, but the sort of formation and how Ryan's been helping to get everything together onto a circuit board that goes into a case that isn't made of Lego that everybody has is it feels like it's been quite a recent journey, but it's definitely been a while.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I think so. Obviously, we released a handheld, and I think when we released a handheld, we always knew that we wanted to make a home console version.
Yeah,
and then it got to a point, just trying to cast my mind back, probably about 9 months ago now, when we was like, okay, let's make that home console version, and make that dream a reality, really. And after we kind of spec'd it out, you know, it's probably a good solid 7 months just constantly working on it, late nights, you know,
yeah,
pizza at the desk kind of thing, and just trying to get it to fruition, really. I know for a fact that Sean, being marketing, is going through his stressful period of the project right now. Whilst, you know, being development, I've already sent off my part, you know, it's already manufactured in that kind of sense. It's already been shipped out. So
yeah, he's got his feet up.
Yeah. Well,
well, he's not.
It doesn't sound like that's the case.
Yes.
He's got 1 foot slightly perched.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can't say you were doing nothing during lockdown, right? You can't say you were bored.
Yeah, exactly. No, my feet are tentatively on the desk, as it were. But I was actually saying about this the other day. It was crazy to think how quickly we've actually managed to produce this product, and to the level of quality, you know, that we were aiming for. It's been pretty impressive.
Especially in the climate as well.
For sure. Yeah.
I mean, it's been one of those things when I came on board, and thinking back to that, it was actually probably around about this time last year that this started happening for me. And I believe the console was already in discussion, and, you know, things have been sort of made up of a look of it and things like that. So
yeah,
it already kind of started from there. But, over the last 18 months, 24 months, pandemic aside, you've got all the things that sort of come off the back of that pandemic that every company's had to face, you know, chip shortages, manufacturing problems, shortages.
Remote working as well, I imagine. I mean, must be a challenge.
I mean, having to do all of this completely and utterly remotely for the better part of a year and a half, especially when you are trying to design a product, you know, and work together, collaborative, as we do as a team, and as Ryan does with everybody that's involved from development, helping development, testing. You know, it's really, really hard to kind of nurture that climate and come out the other end of it with something at all, let alone, you know, at this point, we've been really, really humbled by the reception so far. And, you know, it just shows that, you know, we've been doing something right over this time. So,
yeah, I mean, also the fact that you've shipped one product since the pandemic hit, you're about to ship a second. And without mentioning any names of any other producers, because I know it's difficult for everybody, so we're not going to call anybody out, or I don't want to. But we know that other manufacturers have had difficulty in getting their products to market. You guys are doing it.
And there's also the other bit that people, I suppose, forget, because obviously we talk about the hardware and the hardware being one of the key things, you know, because that's how you experience a lot of these games. But the games themselves, we're a completely physical medium. We're trying to bring the physicality back and the collectability back into retro gaming, and the cartridges need to be produced themselves.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it's not just the fact that we're reliant on this entire thing of creating a physical product for the console. It's the games are physical as well, so we have to, all of that has had to go on consistently during that time too.
Amy's had to do a lot of work on the manuals. I mean, there's a lot of work goes into the manuals, you know. And
Amy, who's our head of creative and head of design, I mean, pretty much everything you see that comes out of Evercade now at this point, visually, be it a cover, manual, a lot of the artwork and the way a lot of things look on our new UI has all come through her as well. I mean, everybody's had to play their part, and they've played their part more than admirably.
Yeah. The interview that you guys gave to Retro Gamer that released in there, was it the most recent or last but one issue, was really great and really interesting. One of the quotes from Amy in that was, and this is an example of how, you know, the consumers, even, you know, I would like to consider myself a reasonably informed consumer. There's so much goes into this that I wouldn't even stop to think about. There was a line in there about how part of the challenge for some games is just finding just some high resolution box art. You know, it's really, everything is a challenge, isn't it? Almost.
Yeah, I mean, it's especially with a lot of stuff that has existed for many, many years. The internet has been great at curating and getting everything over the years to make sure that there is, you know, encyclopedic libraries of a lot of this stuff. But it's for the internet, which means you'll get a file that's probably a slower data rate than most dial-up was back in the day, you know. And when you're trying to produce that for physical print, it just doesn't work. You need to have something that's a lot higher, and, you know, isn't degraded, doesn't have weird pixelation and things like that. And so there's all these challenges. And as we know, with curation of video games in general, a lot of the original owners of these products are either not around, long gone, or didn't keep particularly good records of this stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I can only imagine, and particularly with the climate as well. What there must have been, I mean, you must be pleased with the reception to the Evercade and how the reception has almost steadily kind of improved since its initial release. I mean, it was there a moment over the last 18 months where you thought, actually, this is going really, really well? Was there a time when you thought, you know what, actually, I think we've actually done something which is really, really good here?
I think with that one, it is, you know, again, like, as Sean said, we're a very small team. So, yeah, we're extremely humble and you know, we really appreciate everything everyone's been doing. And I think I've got a story when we actually announced a VS, because bear in mind, when we announced a VS, I already been working on the project with my guys for quite a few months at that point. So, you know, and we spent a lot of time working through different prototypes, having different problems with, you know, the actual boards themselves, and designing solutions for that, and working on the software and then the emulation, because again, like as Sean mentioned, you know, we didn't just do release a console, we also did six carts, effectively was the launch lineup for the VS. So, you know, and four of them were arcades, so arcades its own conversation, I'm sure, will come up. But, you know, we spent months on this, and And when we went into like the initial announcement of the VS, I kind of set my own expectations, really. I was kind of expecting, right, well, you know, it's going to be quite, it's going to be a good chunk of people just, you know, being negative. And that's okay, because, you know, at the end of the day, you get that online a lot as well, you know. You just got to, you just got to bear with it. And, yeah, I'm sure it's going to be okay. There's going to be some people interested. And we announced the VS that day, and I remember sitting up to about 2 o'clock in the morning, just seeing what everybody has been saying about it. And I honestly, on the day of the announcement, I could only see probably 4 or 5 negative comments.
It's incredible.
And I got to admit, I actually had this sudden, almost not like a panic attack, but this sudden surge of worry. I was like, I actually have to deliver on this now, you know. So
yeah, actually expected a good product. Yeah, what's going on?
It was honestly, like, as soon as I put my phone down, it was like it's just getting hit by this brick wall of expectation. I was just like, oh crap, I've actually got to, you know, deliver something here, you know.
I think there's a thing with that as well, with that, you know, we got to that point because we didn't stand still. You know, I mean, I don't say this lightly, but for a lot of people, when the Evercade first launched, is likely a curio. So what's this small handheld device of a screen? You got cartridges? What is this? You know, this is 2020. Why aren't we doing this? But the reviews that came out of it was such a good feeling of nostalgia, but without being completely locked in the past. The modern features were well respected, and it wasn't perfect, and we knew that, and we didn't sit on that. We kept moving, we kept going, we kept pushing forward with making that product better and better with the firmware updates that came. The community realized that and banded behind us, and you get great sites like evercade.info and community projects that come out of Facebook, social media. Not to you. But, you know, and all that grew around it because, you know, communities grow around things that they know people are actually doing and care about. And we did care about it, and we wanted this to be a constantly evolving, better product. This wasn't going to be a one and done, because it couldn't be. The ecosystem of cartridges dictates you have to keep going. And I think once we got to the announcement of the VS, as Ryan was saying, the feedback was so overwhelmingly positive that it was quite a sort of like a realization of we've carried on going, but people have realized we've carried on going, and they feel like whatever we're doing is in safe hands going forward. And we're getting to that point again now where we're sort of looking at it going, oh no, what's happening? What's going to happen? And, you know, the fact that the VS is now coming out to such positive reviews, and a lot of the hard work that we've gone to make sure that we're not standing still. And I'm sure Ryan will agree. We may have our feet up a little bit, but just at this precise moment, but we're definitely not standing still at the moment. And I think
Sean, as well, a lot of it from the community has because of how you respond to any problems there has been, and that's really impressed the community, as opposed to just ignoring people. You almost go out of your way to fix things and make sure people are looked after. And I think that's, a lot of people recognize that. And I think that's made a huge, for me as well, to see, you know, because companies have problems, and it's how they deal with it that makes the difference. Yeah, you know, and that's made a big, had a huge impact, I think.
I know for a fact, right, say, a lot of, say, me and Sean are huge retro gamers. We do a lot of collections and stuff like that. You know, we're collectors, we're also retro gamers. So we're like the target market, really, you know. We are the community. So, and, you know, we've been invested in these retro products in the past, and as Martin correctly said, you know, we get frustrated sometimes equally as much as everyone else, like, you know, when we want this product and something, you know, the company doesn't respond, or, you know, we want a feature and, you know, that feature never gets fulfilled. And, you know, I know for a fact that when I started at Blaze, and, you know, we got the product, the initial handheld out, the first thing we did was it didn't matter how many subscribers someone had, or followers, or anything like that. any criticisms or any feedback, you know, whether it was from a guy on YouTube who had five followers, we would watch and read and just absorb all of that. And I think in the our first task was when the handheld was to basically try and rectify all of those things that we found in that feedback list. And not only was it just things to fix, it was like people just came up with really good ideas, you know. So people coming up with great ideas, which ultimately ended up in the VS, you know, as part of the design spec for the VS.
And there's things now that, as we're seeing the reviews pop up, it's not just the reviewers that we're listening to either. We're combing through the comments, and we've found one great idea that's come from a reviewer that's going to go into a future update.
Super.
We've got an idea that's come from somebody on a comment of a recent review video where we're looking at it going, yeah, that'd be cool. Let's see what we could do with that. And it's the best customer feedback because,
yeah,
I mean, unless we go out and say, you know, YouTube user 123 said this, so we implemented it. I mean, there's a little bit of discovery sometimes that somebody who's in that community will go, oh, I said that. Did they listen? Is the feedback there? And it's not because, you know, the quality assurance of it or anything else or the testing time or anything else. It's just generally because we're so close to this product sometimes that the best ideas are had outside of it from time to time, like a lot of things, I guess.
100%. Go on.
Yeah. So, sorry, Ryan, I was just going to say, I mean, I definitely think it's where you guys set yourselves apart from others, you know, whereas hope you don't mind me saying that. I think when Evercade launched last year, there was a reasonable amount of cynicism. Mm. And I think that wasn't anything that you guys had done or not done. I think it was because of the products that had been on the market previously, possibly didn't have the love and care and attention that clearly Evercade does have. So you were starting from almost that negative steps back, and you had to almost, which was a little unfair, but you almost had to prove yourself before you even had anything out there. But I think where I've noticed from afar, and listening to you guys talking now, listening to a couple of other interviews you've done and reading the Retro Gamer feature, it is absolutely clear that you guys being out in front of this and out in front of people and being so close to it and being so obviously gamers yourselves, this isn't just a commodity to you guys. It feels like this is almost a labour of love. I mean, obviously it's a product as well, but that's really for me what sets Evercade apart from maybe the other products on the market. I mean, is there a danger that almost you kind of get too close to it, you know, and then you can't really, you start to almost feel like it is a labor of love?
I think I'd like to think that, I mean, there's lots of cliches of, you know, that you go to work and you want to go to work because it's the job you love kind of thing. But I think there's a thing when it comes to this kind of product and this kind of stuff where you do have a lot of love and nostalgia set into it. And I mean, from my own perspective and marketing, I'm very acutely aware of that because that's one of the greatest things of talking about the Evercade is talking about the nostalgia and everything it evokes. But at the same time, I think we're all of an age because we're all retro fans. We're all, gamers for a long time.
Yeah,
I think there is a point where you learn to disassociate yourself from certain things and to be able to realize, okay, this is the product, you know, this is what's got to happen, this is what's got to come next, this is what's got to happen. And you know, it is kind of difficult to disassociate from yourself, like me and Ryan have already said, we're quite a small team, so you know, we get quite locked into our own little bubble of making sure that we're creating something that we love as well as what other people will love. But I think we've got quite a good measure of objectivity, both in ourselves and our own makeup, but also from Andrew, the managing director, who, as you've read and you've seen, he's the master of a dad joke. So he'll cut through most things and, you know, get everybody back down to reality and things like that as well. And then there is the cold hard reality of what we have to do in order to bring the games, because essentially we put a lot of effort into making sure people can play the games, and we want to make sure that the games we get are what people want to play. And I mean, game licensing is as cold hard reality as a lot of things, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah, I want to talk more about game license in a minute because it's one of the things I'm actually most, one of the things I'm most interested in about the Evercade. So I want to talk a little bit more about that. In terms of the challenges then of bringing the VS to market, how would you compare it with the development of the handheld? Has it been, could going into the sort of nitty gritty of the development over the past few months, probably more one for Ryan, really?
Yeah, so...
Were the challenges almost foreseeable because of what you'd been through already with the handheld?
Yeah, so...
Go to a dark just feet off that desk, Ryan. This is getting serious.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of a politically correct way of saying it. We did the handheld, right? And it was certainly our foot into the door, into the market, to show the public who we were, what we was trying to achieve. And I think it's it's not a surprise to anyone when we say, you know, this is very much a passion project for us, you know.
Yeah.
We're gamers, we want to make something for the gamers, you know, and for everybody, accessible for all, blah, blah, blah. And we released a handheld and then, yeah, we got the feedback and, yeah, we went away and we worked really hard and we released a new firmware for the handheld and everybody was quite happy with it. And then, then it came to the point of the console, right? So immediately when we was talking about things that we wanted out the console, I was like, right, well, I want it to be 1080p. Because, you know, there wasn't really anything in our price bracket or, you know, our side of the market which did 1080p emulation.
Yeah.
You know, there was nothing out there that did four player ports or anything like that, four player multiplayer. And, you know, there's all of those kind of little things that we wanted to do. But there was also things that we wanted to improve upon on the handheld. You know, we released a handheld, you know, it's already been out there for almost a year at that point.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we got to a point where we was like, we're going to have to restart everything. And if we want to get what we want out from this hardware. So at that point, because I don't know, probably because I'm insane, I made the decision to start everything from scratch. So we effectively, whilst also designing this console, decided to completely rebuild what we already had, you know, all the menus, all the back-end emulation and just everything, everything we basically did for the handheld. We took, obviously, some parts of it, but then pretty much just redid everything from scratch. So I think from a software point of view, that was very daunting, you know. We effectively took this basic we took a chip like a CPU and we said, right, that's the CPU we're going to develop against, let's start. And then literally that was it was from scratch. So
was that born out of a dissatisfaction, Ryan, of what had gone before and what was existing, or was it just because you wanted the VS to have a unique look and feel?
I think it was the fact that it was purely on the basis that we had some time, we had more resource available to us to actually do what we really wanted to do, right?
Yeah, okay.
I think we had, at that point, the more we had, it was, we had the more breathing room for us to just go, right, what do we really want to do? And, you know, and let's build the proper foundation. I mean, don't get me wrong, the handheld is very much a good foundation and has been our main foundation.
I think at that point you can sort of see from like where the console first release and the console collections that come in, you know, things like the initial three that are in that premium pack of Atari, Interplay and Namco, and you look at the way the games are presented, the options that are in the menus, things like that, and you then see how it sort of has evolved over time and that bits of us have kind of come into there with like the great designs that are going on behind everything, different colors of the different carts, you know, and there's now on the when you load up things like, I think Jellico Collection has it, Codemasters has it, the new arcade collections have it, they've all got background art in there and things like that. So, but there's definitely a limit where you sort of see what was there, what was in the handheld. And you know that with anything when it comes to development, software, hardware, and I've been in gaming as an industry for over a decade now. And you realize you do get to a point where it just goes, right, this is as far as we can go with this. Let's move on. Let's get into something else. And
And I think, as Sean rightfully just said, if that was exactly where we were at, really, right? So we knew that we wanted this extra stuff, and to do that, we needed to go a step further.
I mean, if you want to know the real headache that we've got at the moment, it's mostly making sure that everything that we are wanting to do is still accessible. Because obviously we are creating the new VS, and the VS is a little bit more powerful, and we've created a lot of things from scratch. Yeah. And now we've done that, we need to make sure that, you know, the handheld, being the bread and butter product that we've had for the last 18 months, is still able to do this and doesn't get left behind. And like I said earlier, you know, we still keep on going, we're still moving forward, and that's a very key thing that we want to keep on going. So,
and is that important to you, that the handheld almost keeps pace with the VS? And if so, do you ever imagine a time when the VS will render the handheld redundant?
I think the VS and the handheld fulfill different things for customers.
I agree.
You know, they satisfy two different things. Handheld's definitely something that we keep, we really don't want to forget about the handheld. It's not something that we are forgetting about. We were joking about, you know, putting feet on the desk earlier. When I finally fired off the firmware for the VS for the production line, I think I took about a 2-week break. And I think I was working 12-hour days leading up to that for at least a good couple of months. So I took about a 2-week holiday, and then I was straight on to updating the handheld. So the handheld's getting the VS treatment, I like to think. So all the new features, so we put in things like scan lines and bezels and all of that kind of stuff. And now we have added that all into the handheld now. So, you know, it's definitely something that's going to be a partnership, you know, the handheld and the VS. It's not going to be one or the other.
I mean, everything brings its own engineering challenges and that kind of thing as well, because, you know, as we say, the hardware isn't exactly the same in both. You know, there is a bit more grunt behind the VS, but, you know, the handheld not only got us to the party, it got us to the party well, and we learned a lot of good lessons from it, and we're able to reinstill, I almost said reinstall, which is technically true. It's an unintended part.
That's where your head is.
But we can bring what we've learned from the VS and creating this from scratch back to the handheld and saying, right, okay, well, let's re-go over what was originally there and what we've originally done and make that a better experience, make it more powerable between the two. Because the one thing the one thing you sort of don't want to go is, look at this new shiny thing. This thing isn't fun anymore. When, as Ryan says, both the handheld and the VS are two different cornerstones of the market. One of them is that great kind of thing that you can take on the train, take on holiday, and, you know, just put different things in there and just have a good time. And then you can bring it to the VS and have a party with your friends and things like that. But the experiences and the compatibility between the two are pretty much synchronous, you know, from the save states to now bringing the new firmware where you can see your save games as images on both machines and things like that. It's these little things that we know people want because we want them. And that's where it comes back to it being a passion project again, because we go, right, well, we like that. Let's get out there.
Yeah, big time.
And just to make that clear as well, sorry, just to jump in there, Ryan, that just in case people don't know, that the save states are actually on the cartridges. So when you move it from one to the other, you still have your games there, your saves, they're on both. You know, and people have been asking that's...
So the big tip there is don't lose your cartridges.
No.
Yeah.
It's actually
Will there
quite...
be any way to back up?
Well, potentially. Something in the future, maybe.
Okay.
And that's... I also realized when you asked that question, I didn't really touch on the challenges of the hardware. But to be honest, we didn't really have any, is the honest answer. We kind of knew what we wanted from the offset. We kept our ears to the ground. We kept constantly looking at the markets. And, you know, we know that, obviously the chip shortages was about and stuff. And we secured the chips in advance, well in advance. So we knew what we wanted. Yeah. We secured the chips. It wasn't a problem. So in that That's sense, there's no juicy story there, unfortunately.
It's good to know that it's gone well.
Yeah, it's one of those things where we've been able to really, really, I say, read global events very well when it comes to doing this. And I think that's partly the experience of releasing the handheld when we did, is that we sort of realized, and I've been in the industry for 10 years, and I just came from another industry beforehand where shortages of chips, silicon and everything else was a very real problem. Because it was the main component of a lot of the product. Mm-hmm. So we knew, to deliver what we wanted to deliver with the Evercade VS, we didn't want this to be a, oh, it's coming kind of like feeling and bit of delay theater, as it were. So we did all the things that we could do, and that's why we do have the Evercade VS now where it is. And the only thing we couldn't foresee is that, we lose lorry drivers and things would be stuck at ports for ages and things like that. And
there are things that you can never, there's always going to be something, isn't there?
And it's so frustrating because it is something that's completely out of our hands. But because we are, I don't want to say we're plucky underdogs particularly, but we are that kind of small company where we've been so invested in it and been able to get hands on with everything that we can to get it to a point. And we know we haven't got the grunt to sort of take our big retro hand and go, let's just push it a bit further so it gets to the distributors so it can get out and, things like that.
So we got Blaze internal logistics division, have we, just driving the lorries up and down the country?
I don't know if my license stretches to that. I know I can do a big van.
You get a transit van up the road.
Yeah, I've got a towing license, but hardware didn't really have any issues. Software, the biggest issue was just starting from scratch. I think the other thing, the biggest elephant in the room was emulation, right? So one thing that Evercade, one thing that I've been super happy about with the Evercade is our quality of emulation.
Yeah, it is wonderful, yeah.
But it's not just quality emulation. I'm not trying to compare ourselves to a Mister or something like that.
Well, it's very easy to get wrong, isn't it? Because look at our friends over the other side of the world at Nintendo recently are getting some pretty big grief, aren't they, for their own emulation?
Yeah, and the thing is that I guess it's difficult to communicate to the mass public is that we're trying to deliver this product at a very reasonable price. That's been one thing that we've really been trying to do. Even if chip shortages drove up the cost of components, we've kept firm on our prices. We're not gonna, we've tried as much as we could to keep price and any cost, extra cost, we've absorbed and kind of thing. To do that, we have pretty good hardware, especially for the price point, but it's how can you get the most accurate, the best emulation experience on the hardware that you got. And thanks to Andrew, when he promised everybody that arcade emulation was coming along, and then 5 months later, he goes, I'm going to need you to make arcade work. And I'm like, thanks, mate.
Go make it happen, Ryan.
Just pull that one out,
It's one of those things where, like Ryan says, we are the target audience, but also as well, in a kind of sub-branch way, we're both two completely separate parts of the same audience. Ryan, as you've already heard, is very technical. He's very passionate about the emulation, about making sure it's correct and making sure it's perfect, and it is the best that we can do with the hardware and and the fact that we get it to a point that we are happy with it to Ryan's incredibly high standards of it. And at the same time, I'm one of these people that, you know, I am an original player, I am a collector, and I do notice a lot of these things when it comes to performance and stuff like that. But I'm much more into the more sort of mainstream, everyday gamer kind of side of things, where I'm aware these games have been around in emulation ways in some ways, illegally or otherwise, for as long as the consoles have been around in some way.
I mean, nearly we forget that many of them didn't run perfectly on the real hardware, don't we?
And, well, we've got good stories about that.
Oh, yes, we do. But yeah, it's one of those things that we have to make sure that we serve with the type of audience that Ryan is, in making sure that, you know, the retro game is perfect, but also the type of audience that I am, that just want to go on and play a game, and they just want it to run well. They don't really care about it, how it got there or things like that. And I think we've got an incredibly good balance, and the work that Ryan and the team have done to make sure that Arcade runs as well as it does, which is perfect to be through us on both the VS and the handheld, has been nothing short of phenomenal, to be perfectly honest.
So put it like this, right? So when we originally we took the Arcade emulation, you know, the properly commercial version of the emulator, you know, because we wanted to do it right and do it justice, and it's high accuracy, and we threw it on the handheld, and it wanted to use 300% of the resource that the handheld originally had. And
excellent.
And at that point, we were like, right, got a lot of work ahead of us.
Andrew, you know, you said about the Arcade emulation.
So in the end, I think we spent, I think, 3 months literally just optimizing. Wow. And I think we went from about 300% down to about 80% in the end. And you know, it worked great, you know, and I think I could easily say that with this version of the emulator, you won't find it running as well as it is on the Evercade on the same level hardware. That's it. It was something that we spent months on, and during this time we was licensing games for the Arcade, so that's more Andrew's bag. So Andrew's getting the licenses, and and as you said just before, you know, sometimes these actual Arcade games actually had a lot of slowdown and on the actual original hardware. And so Andrew comes to me, he goes, right, so Double Dragon 1, 2, and 3, okay, can you make it work? Okay, it should be fine. All right, so the thing was, right?
Ryan's famous last words, by the way, in the company, is "It should be fine."
It should be fine. Yeah,
I like that attitude, though. That's a good can-do attitude. That should be fine, shouldn't it?
Should be fine. One month down the line, it's like, yeah, we got a can.
I think, in fairness, is your usual quote is "Hold my beer."
Yeah, yeah, it is actually. To be fair, hold my beer. Yeah,
it'll be fine.
No challenge too big, no challenge too small. But
please also top up my beer.
Yeah, I think I must have had too many when I agreed to do Double Dragon 1, though. So I mean, so Double Dragon 1 and 2 have been notorious for slowdown, actually, on the original hardware as well, because they used the same board. It was a different game, but same board hardware stuff. And on top of all, obviously, our technical challenges to make the emulation work on the hardware, I mean, bear in mind, the VS has got more oomph, as Sean said, so it was not an issue for the VS, but we wanted everything to be intercompatible. So, you know, we're trying to make this work on the handheld, and it got to a point where we made it work, you know? We made it work really well, and we had Double Dragon 1, 2, and 3, and the problem is that we didn't want people to confuse emulated lag with bad emulation, right? Whilst, you know, the gamer or the person who knows Double Dragon or someone who plays a lot of Arcade games, you know, would know that, you know, actually this is part of the game, you know.
Yeah,
it was we couldn't take that risk. And I think in the end, I think that's when Comba Tribes, is that,
that's where Comba Tribes came in. Comba Tribes. It's one of those things that, you know, we went to a lot of effort to try and make Double Dragon work. Yeah. And when I say work, we mean run better than it should have done originally. And it sounds like, you know, we're trying to do something that's almost impossible. But like Ryan says, there's the big difference between emulated lag and, you know, bad emulation. And we got to a point that we went and played the game, the actual arcade game, the real board. We've played it. We played it through. We spotted where every single bit of slowdown was, to the point that the actual arcade machine, and this was an original arcade machine, not an emulation or anything, the original arcade machine, it was unplayable past a certain point.
Yeah.
And we understand that, because we have it as well, there is going to be a lot of love and, because of that, misremembrance of the experience of what Double Dragon was.
Yeah.
And also, Double Dragon was a little bit hard, so a lot of people probably only got to a certain point before we got there. And it's like, okay,
we've seen the bad slowdown bit. Yeah.
So it's one of those things that, you know, we have to make that call of, does this present what we want to deliver to us as gamers, let alone our customers? And it wasn't, and it wasn't there. And it's a shame that we haven't been able to do that. But then the glory is we've got an absolutely incredible game that's running perfectly well, because it's a few years down the development line back in the 80s. You know, people have got used to the hardware. They've got used to the coding on it, on the boards and things like that. And a game like Comba Tribes comes along where we can then emulate it better because it was done better in the first instance.
Yeah, so it's better coded in the first place.
Yeah. I mean, that's not a slight on Double Dragon or anything like that. Double Dragon is an incredible game, and it's too good for what was capable at the time.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No, big time. And it was, but the other thing is, Comba Tribes is free play as well, so it all worked out at the end of the day, because it feels much better suited for the VS, right?
You know, and you can throw bikes around, cross some skulls. It's very good.
Exactly. Everyone likes to throw a bike every now and then.
The one thing it does really confuse me about Comba Tribes, actually playing it the other day, is that you could beat people up to a pulp, right? You could punch them, you could kick them, you could headbutt them. But then suddenly, if you bang their heads together, then suddenly blood goes everywhere. But then there's no blood for anything else. You could throw a motorcycle at a bloke and then, like, nothing, right? But if you bang someone's heads together, there's blood everywhere. I
can also tell you that animation of the heads going together is actually, I think it was either taken from another game or put in another game by the same developer.
It sounds like it should have gone into every game. It sounds that good.
I think it's in WWF WrestleFest.
Brilliant.
Because it's one of those, because it's a tag team based wrestling game, and there's a point where you can get both the people, and I think you can knock their heads together. It doesn't have the blood, obviously.
You definitely can do that in WrestleFest. I can't speak to Comba Tribes, but you definitely can do that in WrestleFest.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure which came first.
Good pull, Sean.
This is actually reminded me, and I'm sure you've got plenty of questions, so I'll be very quick. And I'll be sure not to mention what game it was. But we was another thing to making these arcade games and console games work is sometimes we actually have to modify the game to get the most out of it, you know, or sometimes we had a problem where there was a bug with a game where we actually had to go in and actually hex the ROM and actually fix the bug, you know.
Yeah.
So we've done that. We've done it all. But there was one game, arcade game, where we was working on it, and we had to disassemble it and replace something. And there was an extremely graphic hidden image in it. And we couldn't believe it. It was like, why is this hidden in this game? And I don't think no one's ever found this image apart from us on the internet.
Wow.
So it's certainly interesting. So if anyone's into decompilations and stuff like that, have a look at one of the arcade titles on the release, and there's some very suspect image hidden in one of them. So,
well, there you go. There's a challenge laid down to the more technical minded of our listeners. Let's see if you can root out which ROM it is. I like it. So let's talk a little bit about the games then, because games are important, obviously, to us and to certainly to our listeners. So 20 cards or 21 cards currently available for Evercade?
It's 20... Yeah, 20 carts. It's going to be 22 of the red labeled home console retro stuff by the time the VS comes out, and then an extra four, which are the arcade carts.
Yeah, and that is Atari Arcade, Galco, Data East Arcade, and Technos Arcade. Yeah. So they're going to be the four carts available at launch with Bitmap Brothers Collection and Intellivision Collection 1. Yep.
And another collection, like saying about the hardware challenges, that we have had to do a lot of work on to make sure that, you know, people get the best experience from, because translating a control method like the Intellivision to a D-pad four face button thing is very, very, very hard.
I blanked that out from my mind.
Yeah, I
forgot about that night there.
I mean, even Intellivision don't seem to be able to bring Intellivision games back to the modern day.
It's interesting. I actually, you know, we looked at the reference of things that have come before it with that. Just to go slight tangent before we get to the games. Like we looked at the different re-releases that have happened of Intellivision. And obviously we worked quite closely with Intellivision on this project. And it was one of those things where it's sort of like everything that has been done before works to a certain degree, but we need it to be fun to play.
Exactly.
Adding that element of a certain thing to emulate the Intellivision controller visually or things like that, it's just not there. Yeah. And a lot of those games need various different things of that. And it's one of the... I mean, we've said it publicly and we said it on talks as well, but it's one of the things where we have very, very, very heavily curated that collection to make sure that it's fun, because that's the most important thing. And it's going to be happy with the games that are on there because their own memories are of different games, but it has to be playable and it has to be fun. And that's one of the key components of when we're looking at games.
I remember literally spending 2 weeks on playing Intellivision games.
You've got to do it again soon. Got to do it again.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to do it for the second collection as well. But
there was a few rebuilds of that cartridge, I think. Wasn't there?
I think we got to like the 14th RC before we settled on like the
Goldmaster.
And I'm not gonna swear, but honestly, I never had Intellivision, and I actually one of my favourite carts is actually Intellivision. Because there's actually
some
really
of the games are great.
Yeah, there's actually some really good games in there. But I must have played the entire catalog in television catalog about 3 or 4 times, and that was purely on the basis, as Sean said, like what's fun, and we curate these carts a lot. You know, we go through and we play the games and we talk to people and that game was great, and you know, we always go on that basis, but. Thing with like Intellivision, we literally had to go through every game and work out what actually translates well to a face pad, you know, face buttons and a couple of bumpers.
Yeah,
because you don't have those controllers, right? And it's kind of like you go through this like what's feasible, and then you create.
How do you emulate a disc?
Yeah. To be fair, actually, I think the D-pad actually does it quite well.
Yeah.
It's more when you get to the standard, you know, telephone keypad style, you know, 1-0X, you know, I think there's about 6 bumper buttons on the Intellivision controller on the side.
Yeah,
most of them are the same control for a lot of the games, but sometimes they're not. And it's just like, well... There's a lot of these games that are really, really good that we're just not going to be able to do because, we just can't bring it to 2 hands on a controller and it be fun without having to bring something up, without having to do a button combination. And the moment you start getting into a convoluted control scheme, and the one example I always have of this is my wife, who grew up playing Sonic the Hedgehog She then didn't really play video games at all, played Guitar Hero and things like that, and has had a great time playing my PlayStation VR. She loves being in VR.
Yeah.
You give her a pad, like a modern pad, there's too much going on.
Yeah.
Don't know what to do. And that's the thing, the moment you lose that instant accessibility, especially in something that's retro, you lose the audience, you lose the player, and you lose your
interest. You don't have long, do you, to lose it either. I mean, it's almost instant. If it's they bump it, people bounce off things really hard and fast.
Yeah.
So Ryan, so the on behalf of the rest of the world, thank you for playing through the entire Intellivision catalogue.
I mean, Ryan, we've all done that. I mean, I've played at least three or four of the
So Ryan's not the only one then. Oh, okay.
I played at least three or four of the arcade games. I think there's one I've played well into the
Glass. Glass.
I have played Glass and completed Glass.
See, the thing is,
at least 25 times.
It's a good game, right? But the bosses are really hard. So it's like, we were fixing stuff in the games, not necessarily just the emulation. So I'm fixing something in the game, and I'm like, I'm really sorry, Sean, you're just going to have to play through the whole game again.
Yeah, they're not meant to be consumed like that, are they, to be fair?
No, but the thing was, is he was the only one who could beat the bloody boss. So,
also the only person that actually played that game originally when it was out as well.
Right.
I'd actually played it before and recognised it. So it was like, okay, I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, so it's kind of like that, you know. But
so what's it been like then, working with the rights holders? And I appreciate this may be Andrew's field from what you said earlier, rather than either of you guys. But I mean, because one of the things for me that's attractive about the platform is the fact that you know you are playing legal ROMs, and I'm not going to be holier than thou. Like most retro gamers, you know, I have played illegal versions of games. Of course I have. I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast has. But that is one of the things that I find attractive about the likes of Antstream and Evercade, is that you know that it is lawfully licensed. I'm a lawyer, so I've got to like these things, right?
Yeah.
So how much of a challenge is that? And how has that changed from the really early days when you were a new platform to now talking about the arcade ROMs and whatnot?
I got a good one for this, actually. And that's, I think we got to the point where, we never really had any issues licensing. You know, Andrew did an amazing job. I mean, this is very much his bag. He was always in licensing and manufacturing. So he's had years and years in his background, and he's lots of contacts. And, you know, he went out originally in, like, you know, when he released the handheld, I think he signed up 10 carts worth straight off the bat. So that was the launch lineup for the Evercade.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of the initial grunt work is purely down to Andrew from the get-go. And I know that we was licensing, and especially when I was with Andrew, and we was licensing more and more content. It was actually quite interesting when we released the VS, and funny enough, we had a lot more people interested in us.
Yeah,
because I think people were initially skeptical, right? And I think there was this, I guess, this stigma with new retro consoles over the last 5-6 years.
There's been a lot of them.
Yeah, and I think people are quite used to the fact of seeing a new product and then a couple of years it goes away or something like that.
And you don't want anything as well. I mean, from the licensor point of view, you know, you want to get paid for your licenses. And if you've got a company that might be fly by night, you invoice them and you'll never see that invoice come through ever again, you know. But, you know, it works on both sides.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think we released, when we announced the VS, you know, people actually then kind of said, took us seriously. I'm not saying people didn't, but, you know, it was kind of like bolstering that fact that, you know, we are very much here to stay. You know, we're not we're not going to release a product and then just forget about it. And
yeah, the platform's viable all of a sudden.
Exactly. And I think, I'm not to say that hasn't opened up a lot more doors with licensors. It's just made their conversations easy.
Yeah.
And I think the other interesting thing that we've been, it's been quite an interesting thing actually, an experience, a learning experience for us and including Andrew, was that initially we went out to a lot of like mainstream AAA licensors, right? So we went to Namco, we went to Atari, Interplay. And then kind of like out of left field, we wanted to also do like new retro games, right? So we did the Xenocrisis and Tanglewood. Because we,
and then also Mega Cat as well.
And the Indie Heroes as well. Which is not new retro, but it's been most of them have retro
aesthetic. And those three carts have easily been more popular carts. And it's kind
Indie Heroes is my favorite.
Yeah, it kind of blew us away a little bit in terms of expectations, because we was everybody loves the original classics and stuff like that, but I don't think when we initially started licensing these games, we kind of understood the demand that people have for like new retro style games, and it completely blew us away. And again, when we put the VS out, you know, we've had so many guys who are making these, and girls obviously, have been releasing these amazing games come to us and wanting to get their games on the Evercade. And it's been very humbling. And, you know, people spend a lot of time and passion in these like games they're making, and, you know, they really want to stick it on the Evercade. It's
I think one of the key things with that as well, especially when it comes to the indie side, having been on the other side of trying to talk about indie games to people and you know, convince them that indie games are a good thing for a lot of my professional career, is the discoverability.
One of
the things that you can pretty much ask any indie developer is getting your game onto a platform is what sells your game. Because when you are a small indie developer, unless you've got big publisher backing, you don't have budget for marketing, everything you've got to do is yourself. You've got to try and rely on getting it to people who get it, like it, and then will promote it in a good way, be it video, streams, things like that.
It's discoverability, isn't it? How do you get discovered?
And when you get yourself onto those digital platforms, that's not the end of it, because you're then fighting for space on those digital platforms. I mean, I'm not going to name names, but there's one platform that's absolutely notorious for bad discovery. And the fact that we curate, that we have a physical product, that we have it all in one where you can see it, is instant discoverability. And that is one of the best things as well about it from that indie point of view, because it doesn't matter, because you're not fighting against other indie games in order to get your game out there. You're part of a group of indie games. You're all in it together, and it's all on one place. And it's not as if you need to be discovered. You've been discovered. And you can show that. You can say, I've got this cartridge. I am an indie developer, and I have been published on this thing. And in fact, we did that for Indie Heroes. We sent everybody a framed cartridge.
That's brilliant. Well, so Evercade there is a publisher, isn't it?
Yeah, in that regard, at the moment.
In that regard.
Yeah, so...
I mean, is that something, and we talk a little bit more in the future about the future, sort of as we sort of segue into, you know, where we are and what happens next. But given the success and the apparent, and it's great to hear that Indie Heroes is, as I said, my favourite cart so far, and I emphasise so far, because I'd like to look at some of these new ones that are coming up.
You got to look at some of these 2022 carts, mate.
Well, I can't wait to see it. And maybe you could just give us an announcement. But
I think Sean will kill me.
I mean, the one thing I can say with that kind of discoverability and that kind of loss of thing as well is like Brian says, we're always learning, and myself especially. I've played a hand in trying to get some more of the licenses and the retro licenses in there, and those discovering people, getting the conversation started between the company and the licensor. And one of the upcoming carts that we got is based from that which is, you know, I'm kind of learning all the time as well for my own thing, because you never stop learning when you're in industries and in jobs. So it's been really, really good. And I can't announce it. I can't.
No, I'm only joking.
But you will hear about it soon. We have said we're going to announce the companion to the renovation collection by the end of the year, which you will hear. But
see, the renovation collection as well was, I mean, I love stuff like that. I mean, I'm really into the curios. See, I'm a retro gamer, so I do enjoy nostalgia, but really I enjoy looking at curios, where genres started, where things started. And when I read about the renovation collection, if that's the direction, you know, and I know there will always be the clamour for the nostalgia and the well-known games, but I love that direction that you've almost started to branch off to bring in some of these things which have never seen these shores before. I mean, is that kind of thing, the indie heroes, is that something that we will see more of going forward alongside the big well-known collections?
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
I'm gonna say the three pillars of what this is, certainly for us, which is marketing speak, I'm really sorry. but it's Stone Cold Classics, Hidden Gems, and Modern Retro Indie Greats.
Yeah.
And it's those three pillars that, you know, keep us on the line and keep us what we're looking for and keep us going into what we're getting. And, you know, Renovation Collection 1 fits into the Hidden Gems, certainly for a UK and European audience, because those games were never here unless you imported them. And I'm pretty sure I have seen in my lifetime at least Soldies imported in at some point when I was younger. I've got the other one. I've got Soul Feast literally right next to me on Mega CD, the one that did come through. But it's that kind of cornerstone of the three things is kind of what dictates what we do, and that's on all the platforms. So, you know, whether it be console, arcade, whether it be indie,
we look at it
from that point of view.
Yeah, I think there's also we do that on a cartridge level, but I know for a fact, when we were talking about how we assemble those carts, you know, we was kind of talking about Double Dragon earlier, right? Mm. There's obviously an element of feasibility, right?
Yeah.
Can the game actually run? Does it function well? Does it feel good on the Evercade? And all of those kind of things come into play. But we don't necessarily go to a licensor or say, hey, can we have some of your games, and then just throw it on a cart? I cannot begin to tell you how many times a game list has changed on a cartridge whilst we're still trying to like work out what we want or what games we want, because we're constantly like trying our best to create that like perfect balance on a cartridge. So as Sean said, like, I know I'm currently in the process of looking at a cartridge right now, and I know that I want to go for the really classics, like the 80s, like this is what started it all off kind of thing. And then I want one which is, I want a couple which are like really, you know, visually impressive and really action based, really great games. And I also want to throw something in there which people have never heard of, or probably a lot of people haven't never heard of, but is actually an amazing game. So we're all about trying to, you know, bring that nostalgia, you know, try and get those big titles for people, you know, try and give that history of retro gaming, I guess, to a degree. But also try throw in some like hidden gems in there, some curveballs, because that's the thing,
it's like writing a book. It's like watching the movie and creating a movie. It's like any of those things, you know. It's not as linear as a beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah.
But the beats, the enjoyment, the things that you take away from it always have to be of enjoyment of the cart.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm sure you played most, if not all, of the carts, and you've probably seen reviews of people talking about the carts and talking about their games, their favourite games, games they wouldn't do. There's always a part of a book where people don't get on with a certain element.
Of course it is, yeah. And it's taste, isn't it?
There is taste in there as well. And we like to think, to a certain degree, that, you know, as Ryan has just said, with the current project there, you know, we're trying to hit all those beats.
Yeah.
We're trying to hit all those feelings because we know what they evoke in us, and we know that other people will have the same kind of feelings towards him as well. And it's one of those things that it would be very, very easy if we just went over to a licensor and went, here's the deal, here's the contract.
Yeah.
We'll take this and we can put it on a cart, and it'll probably work, you know, for the most part of a home console thing. It would probably work, and people would probably quite like it, but it would just be a repackage.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be what we bring to it. It wouldn't be the Evercade experience. It wouldn't be, oh, we found this and this is actually really, really good. We've got these great little facts about this game, or there's part of this game that's absolutely incredible. You wouldn't get that experience. And I think there's so much out there when it comes to people talking about curation of games and curation of the retro and what nostalgia really is. And there are many companies that will market nostalgia at you for the big characters that they had themselves, when most people's nostalgia is, no, I remember renting this really weird little game and I rented it so much I almost wore it out, and then it became X rental, so I bought it, and that's my nostalgia. It's not the other things. And we're all about that. We're all about discovering the bits that people did know or forgotten or haven't discovered and thought, oh, here we go.
Because that's the most powerful nostalgia, right, isn't it? Is when it hits you when you're not expecting it. It's like, oh, God, I do remember this.
And I think that's one of the things that's going to be with the renovation collection especially, is that people will know the games. People will have heard the games. And there's been 30 years of discourse about a lot of these titles, certainly in Europe, and we've had lots of feedback from people from America that are really excited for this because they do remember it. And it's going to be that confluence of people that remember it and people discovering for the first time something that happened 30 years ago and coming together, and it's
there's a magic to that as well, isn't there? Very exciting. I'm conscious of time, gents, so I have three more questions if you'll indulge me.
Certainly.
In terms of the capability of the current hardware, then including VS, How far can the emulation go in terms of age of games? Because I was looking at the breakdown of stats you've got on your website as to where the games come from platform-wise, and there's been one PS1 game. Now, I know there are limitations in terms once you get into CD and DVD-based media and the size, but could the emulation, could it run a PS1 game in the Evercade way as you would want it to be run?
It's quite a pertinent question at the moment as well. I think actually we've got three at this point.
I beg your pardon. Maybe my research is a little out of date.
We'll have to have
you
a go.
You call yourself a journalist.
I don't.
You'll have to check Evercade Info then, Chris.
Well, that's just where I'm getting my shameless stats from, Martin.
Oh, no, I haven't updated.
I think there's three PlayStation 1 32-bit era games.
Yeah, there's Football Madness, Worms Armageddon, and Speedball.
He's good. See, I'm just setting it up for Martin, you see. He's good.
You know, I'm actually, I haven't been drinking. I haven't been drinking today, I promise, but I'm so glad you answered that question because I almost said something which hasn't even been announced yet. So
I knew exactly what you were going to say as well.
Yeah, but
that's actually pertinent to the question, I guess, as well, is that we do look at things and think they need to work in the Evercade way.
Yeah,
and you know, the limitation that there is the handheld from that point of view because of the buttons and the bumpers.
Well, I could actually. Sorry to interrupt, but I could actually tell you right now, in terms of retro game emulation, 32-bit is a good assumption of where we could land with that kind of thing. CD-based content, not a problem. Yeah, we've done it before. It's something we could do again. We will have games. I think, Sean, you'll be okay with me saying this. I could see him like panicking now. So it's like, what are you going to say?
Let me just mute. Let me just mute Sean a sec. One.
No, I know what you're going to say. I think it's fine.
We're going to have games which are currently on current gen consoles.
Wowzers!
So in terms of in terms of people are saying, "Oh, what's the limit?" Well, you know, it's whatever we could do. You know, the sky's the limit, I guess, but. Not quite. Don't expect to see like I know a common one that
Breath of the Wild.
Yeah. I mean, Ryan says this, and you know, I can quite happily point out, well, yeah, but you can play Alex Kidd on a current gen console.
Yeah,
well
yeah. That's my loophole.
Yeah, no, but two things I will put, like, unfortunately, a lot of people ask, and I have to put it in the nip it in the bud, is Jaguar and Saturn are just. Probably a stretch too far for the
I'd love to sit down with you one day, because I'm not a techie, so I'm and everyone who is techie says to me Saturn can't be emulated, or if it can, it's terrible. And I'd love for somebody, and I don't expect you to do it now, but I'd love for somebody to explain just what it is about that architecture that makes it so difficult to emulate.
It's actually quite a similar answer, I imagine, to the tricky things with some arcade boards, and it is simply just the amount of hardware that there
is it really?
Involved in it, and trying to make sure that it all works with each other. I mean, it's interesting with Saturn, especially given recent releases that have come out on other platforms, and the deep dive into what's going on with them as well, and how they're working and what it does, and what the...
It had two CPUs, didn't it?
It did
as well.
Yeah, I mean, the main issue, in a very layman, quick sentence kind of about it, is that it's, again, as Sean and Martin said, it's the number of ICs, so like the chips that have to be emulated. And it also depends on how much guesswork is involved in emulating those things. Because it's true, because like some of these chips... we just don't know what they do. You emulate them to work as best you think. Actually, some arcade boards, some of the games we had to fix, and some performance takes a bit of a dive in some places, because on some arcade boards they have things called suicide chips, right? So they have a battery on the arcade board. As soon as the battery dies, the chips get wiped.
Wow.
So
there was the CPS2 stuff, was it?
There's CPS2 stuff, but there's also Galco boards, right? So they have these suicide chips. So, you know, people get these boards, and it's getting more and more common now, where you'll get these boards, but you could only dump, say, 80% of the chips on the board, because 20 of them are suicide chips. They've completely wiped out. And
I mean, a lot of that was to counter piracy and stuff like that back in the days, because obviously a lot of people were trying to do arcades or wherever we were trying to make money, you know, and it was people protecting their IP. I mean,
but it's a lot of it is, again, like reverse engineering, you know, how much guesswork goes into this, and then how high level you are with your coding. You know, you've got to start writing stuff in, you know, really low end stuff. So unfortunately, just both of those consoles, super, super complicated, super complex. A lot of guesswork and reverse engineering is required. And it's just not reachable at this time.
But there's a lot more to come from the Evercade hardware, though, that's clear. And that's certainly exciting for consumers like me and our listeners. I don't want to press you too hard on the future, because I know you won't be able to talk too much about what comes next. And in some ways, the future is now, because we're all really looking forward to the VS. I've got my pre-order in. Thank you, Funstop. And I'm anxiously awaiting it next month in time for Christmas, hopefully. Without going into too much detail, I mean, where do you see the kind of next 12 months, 3 years? I mean, is it going to be about supporting what will be the Evercade family? Or do you anticipate the possibility of more additions, iterations, and Evercade 2?
I think there's going to be natural evolution in what comes, because as we step further and we keep going forward, we're always going to run into a block of some kind that we need to overcome.
Yeah.
That could be software, that could be hardware, that could be cartridge sizes, that could be anything, you know. And at the same time, we've listened to what a lot of other people have said about what they like and don't like about our product. So we don't want to stand still on that. We want to be able to turn around and say, okay, that's great. Well, we want to improve that as well. And I think over the next 12 months, especially, you know, we want to give ourselves at least a 48-hour break before we start working on the next big thing.
Got to put your feet up for at least a day.
Exactly, yeah. You know, we got to have, you know, one day drinking, one day hangover, back on it. But
absolutely.
But it's one of those things that, you know, the family will always be the big thing, because the thing that gets people in the door is obviously the games, and the games need to keep coming because people will still want to play more games and for that to grow. And we want to grow that catalogue that we've got access to as well. And at the same time, we want to give people more ways to play. And that's one of the great things about the Evercade versus the VS has four multiplayer options. It has the potential to have a lot more things with Wi-Fi that we're looking into.
Yeah.
And then we all learn from that. We'll know what people want, what people don't want, what works, what doesn't work. And we can look at what we do in the future for the next thing. Obviously we can't give too much away.
Yeah, for sure.
And as you've read the Retro Gamer article, it's probably got a few things in there that it doesn't exactly give it away, but it kind of angles us to what's probably going to come in the future. But, you know, this isn't a short-term project for any of us, and hopefully the VS is good evidence of that. You know, there's a long-haul project in here, and long-haul projects evolve over time, and more things come. Mm-hmm. Who knows what will happen?
I would actually like to add to that, like, just purely from a development point of view, right? So people are wondering, what about new features, fixes, and stuff like that? Because I know a lot of people worry about these products when they come out and there's bugs with stuff or something's not 100% right. One thing that we really wanted to do was really easy to update console, right? Yeah. So Wi-Fi is there. You can literally go to settings, check for updates, download the update. It updates itself. Done. And again, that was back on the from feedback on the handheld. So, but I could tell you right now, I've got at least 2 years of different things planned and updates and maintenance and features for the VS and the handheld. So, in Evercade in general, we've definitely got this big plan coming ahead. We'll have a day one patch, I'm sure. I mean, there has been a couple of bugs, which were convoluted bugs that we found, which I think is quite the norm, you know, these days. But
well, it's not a modern console without a big day one patch, is it?
Well, exactly. You won't be downloading the entire disc or
it will only take you a grand total of 2 hours on a 58 kilobyte.
We're not going to pull a cyberpunk or anybody, but
thank you.
Just thinking about that, it's probably quicker to update the Evercade VS via a phone hotspot now than it would be via a 58 kilobyte modem.
Yeah, no, it's just all right. But yeah, there's lots of features. But one thing I will say, though, every feature that we try and put in, so we want to try and keep updates fun and interesting, right? We want to give people a reason to update. So from a software side of things, we'll be adding in new secret games, new Easter eggs, as well as the bug fixes and the boring kind of stuff. But I say boring stuff, you know, people generally, if people got, you know, a big request and it's requested a lot, we'll add it, you know.
Yeah. Quality of life admin.
That's
I mean, it's only boring when it's all working really nicely, isn't it? It stops being boring when these things start to impact upon usability.
Yeah, when it stops being boring, then my heart starts palpitating.
Exactly, yeah. Your feet come off the desk and then you get to work.
Yeah, hold my beer. But no, like, I know for a fact that, you know, we've just gone through a run of getting the handheld firmware trying to up. Just ready for release, and you know, we fixed a couple of little things with the VS, so now it's like, I know we just had a conversation yesterday, it's like, right, what cool fun things are we going to put in for the day one, you know? And it's like, oh, what secret games can we put in and stuff? So I think that's going to be a great thing to look forward to in the future, is that, you know, when there is an update, we're always going to try and improve the product that you've already purchased and own, you know.
And there's a few things that, you know, because we want to improve them, but we also want to give that nod, you know. Everybody here is a retro fan. Everybody here, you know, who's come to the party, even if they weren't a retro fan before, they're a retro fan now. And, you know, we're also a massive, massive group of wind-up merchants. So there is definitely things that we will keep going to, and we will keep going to the well in order to, you know, make sure that people are having fun, that there's little things for them to enjoy that aren't just the games, but, you know, part of the experience of Evercade is being part of the fun, you know.
Yeah.
And I know Martin's even got his own special Easter egg in the VS, haven't you, Martin?
Yeah. Thanks for that, Ryan.
You're very welcome.
I don't know if Martin knows my my next I say Easter egg, but next addition to the firmware that we've managed to sort. But I think a lot of people might like that as well.
Martin's face on boot. That's what I'd like to see. Big picture of Martin comes up when you boot the console.
Well, to be fair, the Easter egg does involve a photo of Martin. So,
oh dear, Martin, what have you been doing?
is it a single Martin or is it some multiplicity style many Martins? I can't remember now.
Yeah. It's okay, Chris. You can't see my face
as he goes steadily more pink. Gentlemen, one final question, and I want to ask a question of all three of you. So, Martin, this includes you. So, brace yourself. I'm sitting here waiting for the VS, looking forward to it, like many of our listeners and many people who will listen to this. Give me one thing to be excited about, whether it be a feature, a game, something to do with the controller, something, one thing from each of you. Martin.
Oh God, don't put me on the spot first.
I'm intrigued to hear Martin's answer on this.
Yeah, so am I. Let's see how much he's been paying attention over the last few months.
Because you were telling me you've got two VSs, one of which is in a Lego box. So you've spent enough time with it. What? Go on, a game. Give me a game. What should I play first?
Ooh, what should you play first? That's a good question.
While Martin ruminates, guys.
Go on. I'm thinking, I was going to say there's a feature that I would like put in there, and I think it's on the to-do list, but I don't know.
Oh, let's not be putting pressure on Ryan.
We'll have to message about that privately.
What about you, Ryan? If you could pick out one thing, one game, what would you have me, what would you suggest I look forward to?
So, this
was just meant to be a fun question to close. I feel like I'm putting people on the spot.
No, I'm looking forward to all the secrets and Easter eggs because I'm assuming our fans out there, you know who you are, have been really anticipating this release of this console. As these reviews come out, secrets, potential unlockables have been discovered already. So people are getting upset because they think, it's all going to be found before I get to it. I promise you this, right? There's so many hidden, convoluted secrets in that console that there's going to be plenty enough secrets and Easter eggs for you to find when you receive your unit.
So, only the easy ones have been discovered so far.
But only like the tip of the iceberg. Very easy secrets have been found. There's some really convoluted ones in there. There's ones in there which will never be found without me telling what they are. And
it's like a meta game, isn't it? Like, with the console itself.
It's brilliant. Yeah, I sat at the pub the other day. I was at the pub the other day and I thought, oh, you know what we should do? We should add like a secret menu. That'd be really funny because then we could just do these secret codes which unlock these games or stuff. And and we added it. And now,
the amount of people that have asked me about this and gone, what's this keyboard? What's this for?
And
it's a secret.
All the reviewers have said that.
All of them have. YouTube. Yeah.
What's this secret thing
about? I'm so glad.
Eyes are drawn to it.
I'm so glad we added it in. And to be honest, that's my favorite feature. And that's all these little Easter eggs, unlockable games. You could do them through button combinations. You could do them for secret passwords. You're putting two different carts in. I think people are just going to have a lot of fun. And I'm going to constantly keep my eyes open on the community's forums and look to see if someone's found these different games. So,
yeah,
I think that's my biggest thing I'm looking forward to.
Sean, anything to pick out?
Yeah, World Rally. Get onto
Galco. Oh, yeah, I'm quite excited about that.
Oh, no, you stole that from me. I was just about to say that.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
I actually played that in the arcades.
So did I. Here's the gauntlet. High score challenge, Martin versus me on World Rally.
Oh, look forward to that.
Yeah, there it is. Yeah.
We'll bring it live on Retro Asylum. I like it. That is the show.
That's actually what I was going to say, because I know a lot of the reviewers said, "Oh, I've never heard of this company," and I played World Rally back in the day, and it took a long time for it to be even emulated on MAME, and I remember waiting for it to be on MAME. Even
it's never had a port, has it? I don't think
it
never had
almost went to PlayStation 1 in 1996, but then fell through because I think there were some license agreements and PlayStation moved to something else, and then other big companies made some very good rally games that took
Biomechanical Toy was the first home port of Biomechanical Toys on the Evercade.
That, I mean, I say World Rally, but yeah, genuinely, that car is just fun. It's got a lot of great games on it. Really, Alligator Hunt is an incredible shooter that's got those really cool dystopian vibes with a wicked soundtrack.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those cards where it's just like, I have no idea what's going to be on that, but it looks like it's fun, and you come away from it thinking, I've never known anything else other than this cart now.
Yeah.
it's that good. So
fabulous. Well, look, guys, I started off quite excited. I've ended this conversation even more so. I can't wait to get my hands on it. And you're certainly whetting the appetite, not just for the VS, but also what 2022 is going to bring for the handheld as well. So on behalf of everyone at Retro Asylum and all our listeners, thank you for all the work that you've put into it so far. And I wish you every success with the VS and going forward, and we're all hopefully we'll all be the beneficiaries of that success. So thank you so much for giving up your time talking to us this evening. Thank and we'd love to have you back, hopefully, to talk about the success of the VS some point next year.
Hopefully so. And I mean, it goes without saying that we'd love to thank you and thank all the listeners and thank everybody that sort of helped bring us to this part of the party. You know, I mean, as much as Evercade is our success story, it's the community's success story as well. You know, they've kind of rallied behind we're a value proposition, but they put the money where the mouth is for it, and it's enabled us to be able to grow. And you know, we're eternally thankful for everybody that's brought an Evercade, shared their stories of the Evercade, spread the word about Evercade. And it's one of those things that it's a journey together, and we're really going to enjoy next year's journey as much as we've enjoyed this year's as well.
Well, we're all in for the ride, and we've all enjoyed it so far. And the VS looks brilliant, you know, and watching the YouTube videos drop over the past couple of weeks has been, you know, it must be great for you guys. And it's certainly been tantalizing for the rest of us. So, Ryan, I hope you get your feet up on that desk at least for a couple of weeks before you start rolling out these.
I'm already working on projects 2 years ahead, mate. So, but no, honestly, thanks for having us as well. Yeah, we really appreciate it. And, we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the community. We love you guys. I know we always say it every time. So thank you very much. Mm.
Well said. Well, there we go, gents. See you in 2022, and best of wishes for the VS.
Thank you.
Thanks.
If you want to help a fellow retro gaming fan, please listen carefully to the following message. Struggling in the scorching heat, Matt is forced to record podcasts again and again. The heavy burden of thinking up new retro-inspired topics each episode cruelly wears into his back with very little reward. He has sores on his legs too from standing around at retro events, hoping that someone will speak to him. He is desperately thirsty while he waits at the bar, being ignored by the bar staff. This is his life at Retro Asylum, unless someone, somewhere, is willing to help him. You can help Matt by subscribing to his Twitter feed and liking anything that he posts. Perhaps indulge in conversation with him. Help Matt today.
So we're hugely grateful to Ryan and Sean for coming on, and we're grateful to you, mate. So Martin's still with me, and
yeah, I'm still here.
You put this together, seasoned member of both the RA and Evercade communities. You put this together for us, and you were the intermediary. And I thought that the guys came across really well, didn't they? And
yeah, they're a good bunch of guys. You know, I wouldn't associate with them otherwise if there was no fun. You know,
and like you now, I know we talked about a little bit about this before, but you've it's not going to be a novelty for you because you've been messing around with the VS for a while now. But you must be really looking forward to seeing it come to market and.
Yeah, just to seeing how people's reactions to it, and just seeing what people think about it, you know, and coming up with new ideas because they're really open to take stuff on board. Like, so it's really cool to be involved in something like this, you know, for me, especially as I'm a professional developer. I've always wanted to work on games, but never had the opportunity. Right. I'm not writing games around, but just even to be involved, you know, it's completely different to my day job. You know what I mean? So, it's great.
What we'll have to do is a games focused episode in the new year when the VS is out and I've got mine and you know you can talk properly about it. What we'll have to do is you'll have to come on. We'll pick one of the carts and we'll just run through the games.
That would be really good. Maybe do a high score challenge.
maybe the renovation collection or something. You know, we can have a high score challenge and we can just talk about some of the games that are on there and do a bit of a cart review. That'd be good. Everyone knows you now as Mr. Evercade, so you are at least our face of the Evercade community.
Yeah, but I'm actually wearing my Retro Asylum T-shirt still. You know, I am. You know, it's
constantly repping.
Yeah.
And then in 2022, we've just been chatting, haven't we? Before we hit the record button again about COVID and the limitations it's put upon us, and you were supposed to go to Manchester and you didn't get over and whatnot. And
so
next year, mate, we'll get together.
I reckon it's because I couldn't be there. You couldn't, because we met the last time we were there as well, you know, 2 years ago. So, you know, it has to be the old gang, you know, it has to be getting the band back together, you know.
So when was that we were at Revival? That must have been...
That was...
God, 3 years ago
it's
now?
It's heading for 3 years, 2.5, 3 years. I still remember we were taking a photo. And were you there when the young guys drove past? And
no, that was the night before. I wasn't
the night before. It just roared out as its sad old git. I think it was me and Jim and
Blake
Andy
was there as well. Jim was there, wasn't he? Andy as well, maybe. No, I remember us hanging out because I think we were playing Dodonpachi in the game club, weren't we, at the time? Remember hanging out by that candy cab playing? I was trying to play Dodonpachi and performing miserably at it. Happy days, pre-COVID days.
Yeah, pre-COVID, yeah.
Well, mate, thank you so much for putting that together. I hope the listeners have enjoyed it. I'm sure they will have enjoyed hearing you on Retro Asylum, and it's something that I know. What we need to do with you, actually, and I don't suggest we do it now because I'm conscious of time, but we need to do one of those My Favourite Game Patreon episodes with you. So I'd like to do that, actually, because we've been talking about putting together a segments episode. So whenever we do a segments episode, we have these little, you know, interspersed with different smaller segments. So next time we do that, that would be great. I wanted
to say to the team as well, congratulations on your 10-year anniversary.
Oh, thanks, mate.
Yeah,
that'll be much appreciated. And we should have an episode on that going out at some point. But it's much appreciated. Thank you very much.
No problem. My pleasure. And thanks for having me on. You've popped my podcast cherry.
I didn't ever want to be anyone to pop anybody's cherry.
Chalk it up.
I'll take the gratitude.
I might not have, you know, the dulcet tones of Mads, you know, and you know, but
who does?
Know, try my best, yeah, yeah.
who does have the dulcet tones of Mads? And also, while we're here as well, we're having a bit of a kind of thank you fest, but I can thank you almost in person for all the work you do for us over on Playthrough as well.
Oh, so yeah, no problem. And I think you have to send me some new links to put up.
I do, because we just published an episode this evening, yeah. So for those who don't listen to Playthrough or don't know, Martin essentially runs our website and he does it out of the goodness of his heart. And we've been saying for the past year, Martin, we really should just get a bit of a tutorial from you so we can do it ourselves.
No problem. And it's not a big job. It's nice to be able to, you know, help out. Give something back.
Not only does Martin run our website, but he even reminds us when we publish episodes, and then we get this little ping, and it's always Martin saying, you got an episode to send me. Yeah. Where would we be without you? We wouldn't have a populated website.
I know you're busy. You're busy, you know.
Well, look, thank you very much for all you do.
No problem.
Well, there we go, mate. We'll leave it there for this episode. That's been the Evercade episode. Hope everyone's looking forward to their Evercade VS. And Martin, until next time,
yep.
Shall bid you farewell.
You too. Have a good one, Chris.
Bye-bye, mate. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Bye.
From now on, unlike your parents were, you are the secret force of Retro Asylum.
Playing so fast, they're the only ones who can take you back in time. They play old games, they're more retro than J1 Optimus Prime. At home or the arcade for adventures.